नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम फोर्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 22 एंटाइटल्ड प्रीतु महाराज़'स मीटिंग विद द कुमारस शास्ते स्वयाने वासुनिश्चितो नृणम् सेमस्य सद्रियग्रिमेषु तेतुः असङ्गयात्मा व्यतिरिक्तयात्मनि त्रिदारतिर्ब्रह्मणि निर्गुणे चया शास्त्रे स्वयं नैव सुनिश्चितो नृणम् क्षेमस्य साध्रेयग्रिमेषु हितुः असङ्गयात्मा व्यतिरिक्तात्मनि त्रिदारतिर्ब्राह्मणि निर्गुणे च ये शास्त्रे स्वयं नैव सुनिश्चितो नृणम् क्षेमस्य साध्रेयग्रिमेषु हितुः असङ्गयात्मा व्यतिरिक्तयात्मनि त्रिदारतिर्ब्राह्मणि निर्गुणे च ये शास्त्रेषु
इन् द स्क्रिप्चर्स्
इयमेव दिस् इस् ओन्लि Sunishchitah, positively concluded, Nena of human society, Ksemasya of the ultimate welfare, Sadriya perfectly, Vrimisheshu by full consideration. He too, cause, asanga, detachment, atmavyatirikte, the bodily concept of life, admani, unto the Supreme Soul, drida, strong, rati, attachment, brahmani, transcendence, Nirgune, in the Supreme, who is beyond the material modes. Cha, en, ya, which. Translation. It has been conclusively decided in the scriptures, after due consideration, that the ultimate goal for the welfare of human society is detachment from the bodily concept of life, and increase and steadfast attachment for the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental beyond the modes of material nature. Purport. Everyone in human society is engaged for the ultimate benefit of life, but persons who are in the bodily conception cannot achieve the ultimate goal, nor can they understand what it is. The ultimate goal of life is described in the Bhagavad Gita 2:59, Param Vishwanivartate, When one finds out the supreme goal of life, he naturally becomes detached from the bodily concept. Here in this verse, the indication is that one has to steadfastly increase attachment for the transcendence, Brahmani, as confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra 111. Ato Brahma Yigyasa. Without inquiry about the supreme or the transcendence, one cannot give up attachment for this material world. By the evolutionary process in 8,400,000 species of life, one cannot understand the ultimate goal of life, because in all those species of life, the bodily conception is very prominent. Atato Brahmanigyasa means that in order to get out of the bodily conception, one has to increase attachment to or inquiry about Brahman. Then he can be situated in the transcendental devotional service, Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, to increase attachment for Brahman means to engage in devotional service. Those who are attached to the impersonal form of Brahman cannot remain attached for very long. Impersonalists, after rejecting this world as mitya or false, jagan mitya, come down again to this jagan mitya, although they take sannyas to increase their attachment for Brahman. Similarly, many yogis are attached to the localized aspect of Brahman as Paramatma. Great sages like Viswamrita also fall down as victims to women. Therefore, increased attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead is advised in all shastras. That is the only way of detachment from material existence, and is explained in Bhagavad Gita 2:59 as Param Drishtanivartate. One can seize material activities when he actually has the taste for devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also recommended love of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life, Prema Pumartha Mahan. Without increasing love of Godhead, one cannot achieve the perfectional stage of the transcendental position. Om Ajnanatimarandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Akshunitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutane Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, the entire world in all different species, all living beings are caught up in the bodily concept of life. That is the nature of the illusory energy, that when we take birth in this world, we are in the bodily concept of life. Therefore, it is said, Janmanam Jayate Sudra, by birth everyone is a Sudra. That means in the bodily concept of life. Then it says, Sanskarit Bhavet Dvija, by sanskara one can become twice born. So by a ritualistic performance, we can become aware. We can become aware that we are not this body. That is by culture, in other words, not by birth. By birth, all living beings, including human beings, are in the bodily concept of life. It is only by culture that we can rise above, by education, by training. Sanskarit bhavet dvija. Vedapatet bhavet vipra. It is then, by following the injunctions of the Vedas, that we can learn how to engage in positive ritualistic activity. But that deals mainly with the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, which is found in the Dharma Shastra, such as the Manu Samhita. And it is not surprising that in Indian society, that Dharma Shastra came to the foreground. And why is it so? Because it dealt with practical things of life. Whereas the Upanishads, they deal with impersonal liberation, which is far from everyday life. But the Dharma Shastras are dealing with how to conceive children, how to get blessings once children are expected, how to get blessings when they are born, how to get blessings in marriage, how to get blessings in so many ways. When to start education, all these things, practical. Something that we can deal with. Impersonal liberation, very difficult to pursue, because the emphasis on for attaining moksha or mukti was detachment. And then, how can you practice detachment? It is very difficult. When in this world, everything makes us attached. From the day you're born, oh yes, your mother makes a nice soft bed, comfortable. She's your dedicated servant. Whatever you require, she has to supply. And if not, you'll let her know. So in this way, we grow up, and the bodily concept of life is reinforced. First, as a child, we are the center of the universe. Then gradually our vision expands, and we begin to think not only of our own welfare, but extended welfare. We begin to see that if I invest in my neighbors, then they'll behave nicely towards me. And then that will also be for my welfare. So we still stay the center of the universe, but in this case, our universe becomes greater, and we'll have social relationships with neighbors, with society at large, and all to our own advantage and betterment in this world. And in this way, still, even our acts of selflessness, even when we give a donation for a good cause, right, still, it is increasing the bodily concept of life. So by the time that we are adults, we are thoroughly, thoroughly established in the bodily concept of life, which then is described as aham mameti, I am mine. I am mine. So, and in this way, sometimes Prabhupada uses the term extended selfishness, not just focused immediately on us directly, but extended selfishness. Through other things, we also increase in glory, in facility. I'm a very charitable man. I do so many things for others. No, really, yes. Yes, extended selfishness, you know. I mean, really, I gave such a large donation, and my name wasn't mentioned. Man, really, during the festival, I mean, there was no mention of my name at all. How intolerable, unthinkable. I mean, don't they know how to deal properly? You know, well, I'll never give a donation again. Name, fame, and glory was in the back of the mind. Not so much in the back, actually. Quite in the forefront. Yes, so this bodily concept of life is very difficult to overcome. And yes, we are being educated to belong to a certain community. Oh, you are a Gujarati, you're a Punjabi, you are like, I didn't know I was a Punjabi, but now you are a Punjabi because you took birth in a Punjabi family and you have to eat parathas. That's it. You have to, whether you want or not. That's the way it is.
So a culture is imposed upon us, and it becomes, it is anthropologists who study, they study the nature of man and culture of man, and the combination of these two. And it says, an anthropologist typically says, man is suspended between nature and culture. So an anthropological statement was that it's hard to separate nature from culture, because culture becomes a second nature. So much so that you think, this is my nature. Human beings are trained like that. Animals, they simply behave according to impulse and instinct. But human beings, it is an interesting combination of nature and culture, and gets drilled into us to a point that we sometimes find it difficult to find the borderline between the two. Srila Prabhupada used to give the example of a person who wanted to learn music. And everyone had said, actually, this person was very gifted in music. Very gifted, very talented person. So everyone would say, oh, you should study music because you are a natural. No, really, you are a natural. You're really, really good. So you learn. So he went to the music school, and when he tried to enroll in the music school, they charged him quite a sum. And then when he inquired, he found out that other students were paying half. So he went back, hey, what? You are cheating me? You're charging double. Others, they pay only half. So you're cheating me. He says, no. They said at the school, no. No, we're charging you the right price. What do you mean? You're charging them half price, and I already know music. I already know. They know nothing. I know more than them. And you're charging me double? I said, yes. Yes, we're charging you double because it's going to take more effort to teach you, because you've learned so many things already and you learned it all wrong. So we have to re-educate you. And that's going to take an effort. Whereas the others know nothing, it will be easier to teach them everything properly from the beginning. So it is like this. When we come to spiritual life, then we'll have to undo what has been done. So in the beginning, all these ideas are there. You don't have to tell me anything. We know everything. Everything. What do you think? Everything we know. No, you may know something from Vedic culture, although it may not be perfect, because over the millennia, over thousands and thousands of years, some speculation has also entered into the procedures. We may know, but what do we know about pure devotional service? Pure devotional service is well hidden. Mukti darati bhakti na karichit. Liberation, yes, I will give you. You want? Mukti. I will give you. You want it? Take it. Bhakti? No. Bhakti, I don't have any bhakti, Krishna says. Mukti, yes, I will give you. Bhakti, I don't have. Krishna, yes. What are you hiding behind your back? Behind my back? Nothing. Krishna, what is that? Oh, that bhakti. Oh, you want that? Yes, I want that. All right, then I will give you. So in this way, in Bhagavatam, it is explained that Krishna is hiding bhakti. It is in the Bhagavad Gita described as the confidential knowledge. Raja Vija Raja Kuyam. It is said the topmost knowledge, Raja Vija, and it is also Raja Kuyam. It is hidden. It is Kuya. So this hidden knowledge, yes, is not widely available. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we find the description of Gopakumar. And Gopakumar is somehow or other, by the power of his mantra, able to travel through the universe. And by the power of his mantra, he goes to various planetary regions. At one point, he comes up in the planets, in the planetary systems, to Brahmaloka, the abode of Lord Brahma. It is then that Lord Brahma is saying to Gopakumar, "Oh, great that you are here, because I have to go for some sacrifice, and I just needed someone to look after all the affairs." So next moment, there he was. Gopakumar was in charge on Brahmaloka. It was all going on. So one day, all the Vedas personified assembled in the court of Lord Brahma. And Gopakumar was presiding over the function. And as the Vedas assembled, the Upanishads began to speak very loud. Very loud. And they began to explain the conclusions of impersonal Brahman with great force. At one point, the Sampuranas, some confidential Upanishads, and some of the Agamas. Agamas are scriptures that deal with ritual, actually. So some Puranas, some confidential Upanishads, and some confidential Agamas, they could no longer tolerate it. These Agamas are also known as Pancharatra. So we have the Narada Pancharatra, we have the Bhakti Sutras, and a lot of the things that come back in the Nectar of Devotion are finding its roots in Pancharatra. Yeah, so we have the Vedic literatures, various branches, the four Vedas, the Upanishads, and then we have the Agamas and the Pancharatra. And so those confidential scriptures that left the assembly, oh, they just walked out. So you can imagine if I am speaking and suddenly a whole group in the middle stands up and walks out, and especially the seniors, let's say some of the proper disciples, walk out with their nose up, and what will I do? I would be dead. We'd go after them and say, "No, no, no, please, don't go, don't go, don't go. Sorry, can't go. Don't go." We would say, "No, don't go." We try to bring them back. So this is what happened. When these confidential scriptures left the assembly, the others went after them and said, "Oh, no, no, please, have we offend you? Don't go, please come back." And they came back. And then these scriptures began to speak. And they established that over the importance of Brahman, over the importance of impersonal liberation, is bhakti. Pantastu koti sattavatsara sampragamyo vayoratapi manaso munipunga vyavanam supyasti yat prapadichinya vichinchitatve govindamari purusham tamam bhajami. Yes, it is said that by the process of mental speculation, which is the process that is followed by the jnanis, by the impersonalists, of trying to figure out what is spirit, what is matter, neti-neti, by that process, one cannot touch the tip of the toe of the Lord. It says also by the yogic process, by drilling the respiration, and somehow or other, come to kumbhaka. It is the ingoing air and the outgoing air. Now, in pranayama, you have to learn to retain the air. Not only breathe in,
retain. I can still do longer because I'm a singer. Anyway, it takes too long. But so one learns to retain, and gradually one can practice and retain longer and longer. And then one can come to the point of kumbhaka, which is the equilibrium between the ingoing breath and the outgoing breath. And it is said, when yogis are able to stretch this time, they can hold their breath for a very long time, and they can actually live without breathing so much. They still need to breathe, but they can live for quite a long time. Yogis have been put under the ground for 3 weeks and came out alive. You try that for 3 minutes, it's over. Someone who's very good can maybe do 5, can maybe do 7 minutes, but then, you know, start choking. I used to swim underwater the entire length of the swimming pool. So I always was able to hold my breath for a while. But kumbhaka is something else. Then you can keep for a long time. Prabhupada said yogis can do, and frogs can also do. Yeah. Frogs can also do this kumbhaka. Yeah. So if you practice too much yoga, then you have to be careful. Because if you're not pure in heart, if you're not pure in heart, you might just wind up on the froggy side. And then you have to wait for a princess and all these things. Anyway, leaving that for what it is. The real matter is that, yes, this yogic process may be impressive, but it is material. It is simply a material power and a material science. In scripture, it is stated, bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakila ashanta. Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know it. Very good. Yes. So, bhukti means those who enjoy the senses. The mukti, those are looking for liberation. And the siddhis, those who want mystic power. Wouldn't it be great if you had mystic power? If you could just manifest meals on the table without cooking. If you could just get money without going to the bank. Right there in the house, on the table. Stacks of money, just like that. Oh, wouldn't it be good? It would, wouldn't it? Yes, it would, wouldn't it? But that is mystic power. It's possible to get such mystic power. But the problem with this mystic power is that it will increase our material desires. Imagine, I was once in Mumbai in the Reserve Bank, and I had to bring a suitcase with cash which had to be deposited in the bank, and it had to be counted in the bank. So they sent me to a special room in the back in the bank, which was a counting room. And it was about as big as this temple room. And in the middle, there was a huge table. And all these people were sitting around the table. And then there were guards all around with machine guns, etc. The people that were counting, they had huge amounts of cash in front of them. And they're counting the cash. And then after counting it, they wrote it down and they pushed it towards the middle. And
more and more. And then in the middle, this whole mountain of cash was building up. And it was all, and they were sitting there counting the cash and looking at the cash. A mountain of cash. And the atmosphere in that room was very tense. You could see everyone was looking at the cash. And there were crores and crores and crores on that table. Many, many crores. And the guards stood there with the machine guns. It was an interesting experience. Every room has an atmosphere, and you could cut the atmosphere in that room. There was tension. Money. Money is the honey. Yes, that's the problem. That when one has mystic power and all these things are easily available, it increases one's material desires. Therefore, even the cities, even those who have mystic perfections, they become obsessed with material enjoyment. They don't become detached. That's the cities. How about the muktis, those who are looking for liberation? They surely are detached. No, they are attached to be detached. That's also a problem. I'm so detached. I'm so terribly detached. This hand has not touched money for 50 years. But my secretaries, they touch all the money for me. This hand never touches. But I'm using his hand. Yes. In this way. That's false detachment. So, when we are attached to being detached, then our detachment is not complete. It is called Falgu Vairagya. I was traveling in India, and I went to Gaya. Oh yes, Gaya, such a nice place. It is the place where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to that Vishnupad Mandir, where there is the print of Lord Vishnu in the mountain. And a temple is built around it, and they pour milk, and you can go there, and it is a place especially where people go to perform the Shraddha ceremony to get benefits for their departed relatives. And Nimai Pandit also went for his father. All right. So I went to that place. It was very nice. And then I also heard there is a river, the Falgu River. I said, okay, let me go. It was hot. Garam, garam, bahut garam, jada garam, 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 jada garam. So I thought, let me take a bath in the river. Since I'm here, place of pilgrimage, garam, 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 bath in the river will be good. So I went to the river, no water, all sand. What's going on? This Falgu River, what kind of river is this? There is no sand, no water. Oh, I said to the local people, no water in your river. They said, no. No, you have to dig. You dig, go dig, yes. You dig, and there is water under the ground. Yeah, so I was digging, and then about, 1.5 foot under the ground, there was water. It was an underground river. So, wow, an underground river. Yeah, you never heard of that, eh? Oh, yes. You also have underground rivers. And the Falgu River is one like that. Falgu Vairagya. Renunciation, but under the surface. Yes, the desires are still there. This is the renunciation when we are interested in renunciation for renunciation's sake. I want to be renounced. You're still a wannabe. Not a wallaby, but a wannabe. Yeah? You're still a wannabe. Yes? You want to be renounced. But when we are attached to Krishna, then it's not about being renounced. Then it is simply about attached to Krishna. Krishna is so wonderful. Huh? Krishna is so wonderful. You want to come and watch this movie? Huh? No. I have no time for these things. I'm too busy for Krishna. I want to do some service for Krishna. Oh, but this is the latest from Bollywood. Yes? Very nice. Of course, some want to do something for Krishna and a little Bollywood as well. That's also there. That's another position. But then our attachment to Krishna, so we may be attached to Krishna and also attached to material things, to both. Now what do we do? That's a difficult position, because then you have to divide your energy. So much for Krishna, so much for me. You have to always weigh everything. And then sometimes it's so much for Krishna. Take some back for me. What to do? What to do? Some difficulty. So this is creating some tension in spiritual life. Oh, let us minimize what we need for ourselves. Let us simplify if we can. And let us use more for Krishna. That will be better, because then we get eternal credit. For the temporary, we get material comfort. Big house for me, little room for Krishna. Very nice. Very nice, Mandir. Bahut badhiya. It's the cupboard. Anyway, it's okay. House for me, cupboard for Krishna. Some put Krishna right there in the middle in the living room. This big altar right there. Boom. So, whoa, look at this. Others have a serious temple at home, whatever it may be. It makes a difference. We can try to not only, it's not only about the temple. You can put Krishna in the living room, but actually still, not care much about Krishna. We can even live here in the temple and not care about Krishna. Not so much. We can care more about ourselves. So ultimately, it is what place are we giving Krishna in our heart, in our life. Really. So, Bhagavad Gita is speaking about developing attachment to Krishna. Maya Shaktamana Partha Yogi Union Vadasrayaha. It is said that Ashaktamana, so we must develop the mind that always thinks about Krishna. So, the mind, it's whatever you put in the mind. They speak about impressions upon the mind. That is, of course, a metaphor. It was the idea that you could make impressions in clay. You walk on your sand and your feet make impressions. So that whatever happens, all different things that happen leave an impression in the mind, like a footprint in the mind. What happened yesterday? Yes, still a footprint in my mind. Oh, and last week, another footprint in my mind. Oh yes, when I was young, in the back of my mind, many footprints. The when I was young footprints, and a whole, like a landscape full with prints. so many impressions stored in memory banks, and little by little, as you're getting old, it goes away. You're losing something. Yes. So what to do? These impressions, the process of devotional service is not to conquer them. So now I have all these materialistic impressions. Actually, in my country, I grew up and there was a particular advertisement for margarine on the TV, and they had a song, and I'm not going to sing it. But it's still there. I try to get rid of this song for my whole life, my whole spiritual life. I'm trying to get rid of it, but it's there. It doesn't want to go. And I'm sure you also have some stupid song that's in the head, you know? Something, some really stupid song, and you can't get rid of it, even if you try. But it's still there after so many years. So it's like this. Now I have to become detached. So do I have to get rid of all these false impressions? What to do? I picked up all these rubbish impressions throughout my life, and now I have to conquer them one by one. Kick out this memory of this song. Impossible. It's like pushing a ball underwater. If you push a ball underwater, you can't keep it there. It comes back up on its own. It always wants to go back up. You're pushing it down. But one moment, it slips from your hand. It wants to go back up. So all these impressions also, they come back into the forefront of our consciousness. Are we ever going to conquer them all? No. We can try and push them down, but the only result will be Falgu Vairagya. They'll go under the surface and still be there. And just wait a while until something comes for Mr. Detachment, and they will again be reawoken. Somehow or other, the old impressions are woken up again. Oh no, I thought I got rid of this. No, I am back. Yes, this is the situation. So what do we do now? Don't worry. Don't worry about such things, Prabhu. We have the solution. The solution is simply fill the mind with impressions about Krishna. More impressions about Krishna. Fill it. And these impressions will just take over. And these impressions will push out all the other impressions. Completely. Until one day they'll just go away. And that is our system. So our system is not to overcome our detachment. Our material attachment. Our system is fill the consciousness with remembrance of Krishna. Fill our life with service. Fill our life with remembrance of Krishna. And then all material things go away. Therefore, we're not looking at, you know, how great a yogi are you? I'm getting up earlier than early. Not only early. I know 4 o'clock is early. I'm getting up earlier than early. How early are you getting up? I'm getting up at 3. That is nothing. Only 3. So lazy. I get up at 2. At 2. That is nothing. I get up at 1. One is for old ladies. I'm getting up at midnight. Every night, midnight, I get up. Yes. No, midnight, so late. I'm getting up at 11. That is nothing. I don't go to bed at all. Never. I mean, Yes. Very nice. Very nice. You are a great yogi. You are very determined. Not going to bed at all. Oh. And still awake. Impressive. You are a wonderful yogi. But this doesn't give you any attachment to Krishna whatsoever. Okay, you're not sleeping, but are you attached to Krishna? That is the question. Your detachment, your vairagya is extraordinary, but what about attachment to Krishna? Yes, you put so much emphasis on the austerity, but no emphasis on developing the attachment to Krishna. Now do service for Krishna. Do more service for Krishna. You get up at 4, that's fine. Yes, and some days even, somehow or other, it got a little later. Oh, how is it possible? And Prabhupada said, my father used to get up a little later. Because my father, he would have a shop and people would come in the evening, textiles, and then he would come home and then he would still do puja. So it would get late at night and he would get up a little later in the morning. Still, Prabhupada said my father was a pure devotee. Oh, how is it possible? The essence is not about our austerity. The essence is not about how cold is the water that you're using for your bath. Is it cold? No. You're putting some water in the bucket and then you put ice? No. You're not putting ice for bath? Oh, this is not good. You have to put lots of ice. And in the winter in Melbourne, you go in the ocean. Yes, these things. You show you're a man. But will this give us any love for Krishna?
No.
It will not give us any love for Krishna. No, love for Krishna simply comes from devotional service. So let us make that our focus. Devotional service to Krishna. Hearing about Krishna and all these things. Then at one point, we don't care about these material things anymore. They look empty and bleak. You know. It all looks like a waste of time, material things. Yeah, same like, like Prahlad. Prahlad, you want to come and play? Prahlad was too busy. Prahlad didn't come and play. Prahlad was worshipping Krishna. He was remembering Krishna. Even Prahlad, come for prasad. It rhymes, but Prahlad didn't come because he was too absorbed in remembering Krishna. So is described in Bhagavatam. So he was fully absorbed in attachment to Krishna. Oh, when will that day be ours? Oh, when will I be detached? Will I be attached to Krishna? It will come automatically, simply by being absorbed in devotional service. Okay, I'll end. Any questions, any comments? Was too clear. I didn't create any. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the comment. You mentioned about the detachment and attachment. Now, when we doing the practice, so should we concentrate more on the attachment or on the detachment? Because Bhagavan also mentioned about the end of year and
the last bit I cannot hear that.
Bhagavatam also mentions about Endavir and the mercy, and the two So should we endeavor to develop detachment or just concentrate on
detachment? We are greatly entangled when in material life when suddenly transcendental knowledge comes to us. And there are many things that we did wrong before and that now have to change. So we have to cultivate a little bit of detachment from those things that were wrong. Eating the wrong things, sleeping in the wrong way, everything in the wrong way. All right, we have to develop some detachment to adjust these things. That's why Srila Prabhupada focused four regulative principles very clearly. So it is very clear that everyone can see, oh, here I have to cultivate some detachment. Oh, I like my tandoori, .. No more tandoori. No? Sorry. No? Not that .. Tandoori, .. No. That has to go. So what to do now? That is... So some cutting is required. And that is some renunciation and a little painful, and we have to cultivate some detachment there. But that is difficult to maintain. Difficult to maintain if we do not develop attachment to Krishna. So the focus has to be on attachment. Otherwise we'll go back to our tandoori one day. Again, tandoori, .. No. This is not good. So, like this, the focus is on attachment. On attachment to Krishna. Therefore, the focus is on devotional service to Krishna. Because that attachment is the result of devotional service. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Hare Krishna to you too.
You mentioned that Robert's father, he used to get up late because he would finish late. But then at the same time, like, he was pure devotee, of course, but then I was reading one of Prabhupada's letters and he was telling to some of the devotees that you must get up in the morning for Mangala Arati and chant your rounds in the morning, otherwise there's no chance of answering speech.
So what do we do now? It seems that sometimes there are contradictory statements, and how do we resolve them? Do we have to bring all Prabhupada's statements together, study them and look at the controversy, and then try to draw one conclusion out of that? That's my question to you.
Nice. You make it easy.
Yes. But that's not how it works. Because that would be fundamentalism. To reduce everything to one conclusion. Rather, the point is that all these things have their relevance according to time, place, and circumstance. Okay? So, in case of Prabhupada's father, because he was a grihastha, had to maintain his family, had a shop that was open late night, was still doing puja at night, etc., then he had to also sleep sometimes. So in his life, it had to be a little later, because he's a grihastha. Now, if you live in a temple, a brahmachari life, right, it's already different. There, of course, temple is temple. Right? There is a mangalarti that should be maintained. So brahmachari is just trained, no matter what. Go to Mangalarti. Except there are exceptions to that rule. Yeah. Where Prabhupada says first health, then sadhana, then service. So when health does, that's not, I have a sniffle. Oh, I have a sniffle, now I have a great excuse. Now I don't have to go. Right? But when there are serious health conditions, then maybe not good. then maybe one should actually rest. Yeah. Then there's an exceptional circumstance. So, in this way, one should not take one instruction of Srila Prabhupada, carve it in a stone slab, right? Carve it in, take the stone slab, hold it up, and hit other people over the head with that stone slab. That we should not do. That's not good. We should look at the different instructions and sort of in a balanced way. But obviously, Mangalarti has been emphasized as something very important and something we should all strive for. And the Brahma Muhurta, early in the morning, that particular time, has been highlighted as the ideal time for spiritual life. And it doesn't matter whether you are married and have 3 children and 7 grandchildren and 55 nieces and cousins and 17 aunties and God knows what else you might have, you know, on the sides of your in-laws. And whatever you have, and all these things are no excuse for missing the Brahma Muhurta. If you miss the Brahma Muhurta, you miss something. Definitely. Having said that, I missed Mangalarti today because I came from London and I'm 9 hours behind. It's midnight right now. I'm sitting here at midnight looking at you all from, gosh, you're up late tonight. I'm just now going for a midnight snack. That'd be good. Looking forward to that. Anyway, so after 24 hours of flying, I thought, considering health, I thought, maybe get up a little later today. I could have pushed myself, I said, come on, you know, go, and I could have gone. But then I'm thinking, what if one day something pops in my head, you know? Swami had a stroke because he pushed too much at 66. So, balancing everything also makes sense, young man. I mean, it's good to be austere. But when your leg falls off, then maybe you should screw it back on. You know what I'm talking about. A Mangalarti is a good thing. Definitely. Desirable. As much as really possible, we should really go. And at home, we should rise early, early. Yeah, bravo.
Just going to make a small comment.
Please.
I remember in the Gurukul.
My Gurukul.
We're in the 70s, and Prabhupada, he started Mangalarti, but he didn't come. So I asked the teacher, there's so much emphasis on the Mangalarti. Prabhupada started it, and why isn't he coming to Mangalarti? So that's my teacher here in Agarwal. And he says, how dare you can say like that? Prabhupada, you know, he doesn't think Mangalarti. He's always thinking Krishna. So then he explained that we need Prabhupada always, for us we need the regular principles, but Prabhupada himself is always in the heart of Krishna.
Yeah, I always say the weak devotees, they must go to Mangalarti every day. When you're really strong, then you don't have to go. But who is really strong? Most of us are somewhat weak. So as long as you're weak, let it go. Otherwise, become more weak. Anyway, it is. I think it's time to end. Thank you very much.
Because Mongolian time is over, it's prasadam time. So, and everyone comes for that. No problem. Srila Prabhupada ki.